Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon. This week's Andy's Girls is brought to you by a very stylish Beverly Hills housewife. Here's a clue. Around here, there's more than just dresses in everyone's closet. That's right. I am recording Andy's Girls 157 wearing a brand new piece from the Kyle and Shahida collection, one that the OG of BH herself approved. To get a front row seat to this Amaz ensemble, check out my Instagram at Dame Galley. And to see more of the Kyle and Shahida collection, including all of the outfits showcased during the Beverly Hills Season 10 premiere, check out kyle-shahida.com. Lucky for all of us, your budget can be much less than Dana Pam's $25,000 and still shine bright like a diamond. Enjoy this week's Andy's Girls. Have you also lost your sense of smell? Because your taste is obviously gone.
I may not be an essential worker, but at least I'm a work in progress.
Wait, that is the single best Corona-related and maybe also making it to the final tier guest co-host tagline that I have ever heard. That was very, very good. And of course, you guys, of course it has to be from the one, the only, Doris Kearns Goodwin, OG of all things Bravo. You guys, it's episode 157 of Andy's Girls. And I am so excited, so thrilled to be joined by none other than writer and host of the absolutely perfect podcast, Shut Up Evan, His Holiness Evan Ruskatz.
Thank you so much. What a lovely intro. Can I say one thing about you real quick?
Yeah. Do I look, I'm a skinny legend. Thank you so much.
You are a skinny legend. Listening to last week's episode with Brian Moylan. And one thing that jumped out at me, you are just like such a terrific like conversationalist. There's just like a balance that's not always achieved when you have random guests coming in and out, and you just like navigate a guest so well, and it really is a skill. And I wanted to point that out up to you, up top.
Well, you guys, this was such a good episode. I can't get any better than that.
Thank you. And just because I muster, and I appreciate that, and my therapist, and I'm taking in the compliment. I'm not doing like a bullshit passive aggressive thing, because that's actually disrespectful to the person giving me the compliment. I am receiving it. Thank you. $80 copay will be $30 when I hit my deductible. I very, very much appreciate that, Evan Ross Katz. And that means so much coming from you. I mean, I have to tell you, I was just listening to, so I listened to your podcast, which is like the exact right salve that I need right now. Like, I unfortunately have made the holiest of sacrifices of not listening to Bravo-based pods because I don't want anything to influence. But I love your podcast because it is the perfect podcast to listen to and take in and not be triggered by, but also learn things through, if that makes any sense. Like, it is a great cleansing, healing, informational, informative conversation. And I was listening to your ep with Detox this week. I'm not a Drag Race person. I need to be. I saw the which season of All Stars did you guys reference with the most famous song of all?
Two.
So I've seen that, and I've seen like a couple others, but it was so, I mean, like, talk about talent when you're interviewing a guest who I may or may not have like a ton of background history about, and I am fascinated and understand the journey and understand the conversation. Mm-hmm. I listened to your ep with Rich yesterday. I started listening to Nikki Glaser. I mean, can you tell the listeners about Shut Up Evan? Because you're 12-ish episodes in, and it's really, really, I highly, highly recommend it to all the AGs. You reference Housewives, you reference Bravo, but it's really about a bigger conversation. Can you tell the listeners all about Shut Up Evan and why you should never shut up?
Yeah, well, thank you. That's so nice of you. I mean,
we're just wonderful.
The one thing about it that I feel really proud of at the moment is just like, there, I do a lot of research before a guest comes on. So mm-hmm. when I finally get the guest, I really try and just soak up as much information, both like what's on the internet about them, and then I will talk to people that know them. I will talk mm-hmm. to longtime fans of theirs. So like this Tuesday, I have Isaac Mizrahi on the show, and I went and spoke to people. I had Christopher John Rogers call in to ask him a question. I spoke to people that used to work for Isaac. I spoke to his best friend. I really want to make sure that I'm asking questions that A, they've never been asked before, but B, can really be like springboards for larger conversations about culture. And so sometimes that's LGBTQ+ culture. With Isaac, we really get into Jewish culture because him and I are both Jewish. But so I think like I really try and use that like Terry Gross approach. I remember she like once posted a picture of the book that she had marked up of some guest that was coming on, of all like the dog tags in the book.
Yeah.
And I am not that meticulous. I aspire to be, but I really just, I love to kiki, but I really try, and I love that format of podcast, but for what I wanted to do, I was like, I wanted something that was really rich in research.
Mm-hmm. And what are you, I mean, if you had to pick a poison, what lens do you use to like look at the world? You've written a lot about culture, a lot about gay culture, LGBTQ issues. You've written a lot about fashion. I find like I'm endlessly intrigued by your posts on social. You talk a lot about Bravo. Is there one that if you wrote about it for the rest of your life, you would be fully satiated? Or is it the fun combo of it all that like makes your life glitter?
Definitely love the combo. I like not, you know, being beholden to one topic. And I really like to like kind of gestate between. But to answer your question, if I had to choose, The View, period.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I've been watching The View now for 17 years. I took one season off, the season that Jenny McCarthy was on, but I really have just been such a loyalist to The View. I've watched so many iterations of casts, and it's just a show that both what's happening on screen and the behind the scenes are so fascinating to me. And as I've worked my way into knowing several of like the players more intimately and developed private relationships with them and sort of get, I don't want to say I get like tea, but I get like little, you know, things. I get a little, I'm able to corroborate information or whatnot. That's very gratifying for me.
Who do you think is the single best? Because I'm so intrigued by this because I just also finished The Ladies Who Punch, which was as intoxicating as I thought it was going to be. I loved it. I have to tell you, I like loved it. I like ate it with a spoon. Who do you think is the single best panelist, best at their job, best whatever, that has come, that has been a part of The View?
So I think that has to be broken into two sections because it's like there's best co-host and best moderator because those are really different roles to play on the show.
Oh my God, I want
to
know both. I want to know both.
But the best co-host of all time is Joy Behar. Anyone that tells you differently isn't a scholar of the show. It's just kind of that is the reality. I would love an argument for somebody else, but I would get really defensive, but I'd be open to hearing it. And then moderator, I have a soft spot for Meredith Vieira.
I was going to say, how could it not be Meredith Vieira? Yeah. Is there really even a choice?
Yeah, but like, that said, like, I really do love Whoopi's steady hand, and I don't think the show would have lasted, like, in that era before Whoopi came in, I don't think the show would have lasted had Whoopi not come in. I really see her as saving the show.
And yet she is so complicated in some of the shit she says where I'm like, oh, my God, I disagree with you vehemently politically. And I didn't expect that. But I think your level of wealth sort of supersedes, I don't know, empathy for something else. It's just so fascinating to me. It's like the lens in which she views the world.
She's really fascinating. I guess I have so much respect for those women. Not only just as like intelligent, smart professionals, but also I just think there's something really brave about going on television, live television every single morning, talking about topics that might be just breaking or still like, still going through the news cycle, you know, are within the news cycle and updates are happening in real time. And, you know, whereas like I can go and research a guest. They don't always have that luxury, you know, given the velocity of the news cycle. And just to come on and express your opinion, to be thrown a topic and to say something and sound smart and not be able to be dragged by vultures who, let's be honest, when it comes to that show, are really wanting to find problem spots. Like, are not
rabidly watching.
Yeah. Yes. I just think that what they do is like so fucking amazing. And this new era in Zoom is proving to just, it still has the magic.
You know what? There's a period of time in which I was watching it every day. And then I have to tell you, I was shattered by the Lizzie Hasselbeck, Rosie stuff. I thought it was just way too toxic and it was actually upsetting. Like, I cannot watch that again. It triggers me. Like, I get actual anxiety because it feels like two people are like crying at each other and neither of them can fully listen. And the more I hear about stuff that happened backstage, the more I'm like, ugh, but I really want to get back into it. I find myself watching a lot of clips when you post stuff. And Pet Shop Boy, I think, posts a fair number of stuff too. And I feel like maybe it's time. I don't know that I could do a full episode, but maybe I should give it a try.
Yeah, so I would just say do the first half hour. Like, do the first half.
Only do Hot Topics.
Yeah, like, once Cuomo comes busting in with his daily briefing, I switch over to the second ABC, the local channel. I would say at that point, you drop out.
Do you think that Bravo could ever do some sort of daily panel? There's this whole thing where I think that they're planning on doing some sort of panel show with Kate Chastain, but I think that was more about just like recapping Bravo shows. Do you think that that's a route? I mean, like, obviously certain Bravo celebrities have tried daytime TV a la Bethany Crashing and Burning, but do you think that that is something that the network could do, could produce?
No.
No. Just no. We don't think that that's possible. You don't want NeNe Leakes talking about Afghanistan. You don't want to see.
I don't need NeNe Leakes talking about anything.
And I think NeNe would agree with you. P.S. Shout out to NeNe Leakes and Dorinda Medley, who have taken this time of corona to supply us content on YouTube in such interesting ways. Mm. For example, Candy Burris Tucker has done Speak On It or whatever it's called for seemingly centuries at this point, or it feels like a long time, where she does a recap of episodes after they air and she actually has something to say. And then Nene fairly recently was like, I'm going to start my own YouTube situation where I talk to you guys. And I got through 5 minutes of it. And the entire 5 minutes was her saying, I'm going to talk to you, but I'm not going to, it's not going to be super long, but it's maybe going to be long. And I'm talking to you. And this is what I'm saying. And I have something to say and I'm going to say it. And it's going to maybe happen every other day, but I have something to be said and something, whatever. And then Dorinda has hopped on the YouTube recap train and looks like she's reading a script from her computer screen that was a flat out recap of the show, probably written by someone who, I don't know, wasn't a part of filming, but is watching these episodes when they get a screener, and pretends that what she's saying is funny because she like lightens her voice of, and then Sonia gets her fashion show ready. And things happen. And that's it. There's nothing else. She looks so unhappy. She's just reading it. And that's all there is to it. It is the strangest experience. Have you been watching any of this?
I've seen clips here and there. I guess it's just, I think back upon, like, when have I enjoyed, like, a housewife's self-postmortem, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think back about, like, Carol in the Aviva era. Going online and being like, explain, like pleading her case for like why she did write her book. In that instance, I'm kind of like gripped because I'm like, oh, here's this person that was edited in a certain way, not edited wrong, but just was edited in a certain way and wants to sort of retain some sense of their personal narrative and is shrewd about it. Mm-hmm. In the case of like Nene and Dorinda, it's like, I got what I needed on the show.
And I miss, it makes me miss the Bravo blogs, because at least then, for better or worse, someone at BravoTV.com would be editing it.
Totally.
So these women look better when they decide, when they think that we love them for their personalities alone, which P.S. I think is actually a very small group of these women. It doesn't necessarily translate into great content. And it also shows the importance and power of incredible editors and production companies. Yeah. Because when these women do it themselves, it's not necessarily the greatest work. It's traumatic.
Yeah.
But the reason that I am the exact opposite of traumatized is because I wanted to have you on this week specifically, because I feel like it's a little bit of a fashion episode. I myself am wearing a robe, dress, cool combo from Her Holiness Kyle by Shahida. I am so thrilled. I have been a Kyle stan. I've been a Kyle supporter and strong admirer of her life journey, German Shepherds, and Backyard Pool for a while. And I watched with a lot of curiosity the premiere episode. You yourself made a cameo. This week on New York, we had Sonia's fashion show. So I wanted to get your thoughts on both. First off, can you tell me a little bit about how you found yourself at the Kyle by Shahida New York Fashion Week runway extravaganza? Front row, by the way. Front fucking row.
So I had gotten an invite through the PR company for the show before knowing there was any Housewives tie-in besides Kyle being attached to it.
Oh.
And so at that time, I turned it down only because I had a different... I work in fashion, so I had a different runway show that I had to attend for work.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rinna reached out to me and was like, we're all walking, we're filming, I'd love you to come. And I had never met Rinna in person at that time. And so I sent my boyfriend to go see the runway show that I was supposed to go see. And I was like, beelined it over to, I think it's Pier 59, I want to say. And I beelined it over there. And yeah, I went as a guest of Rinna's.
So tell me a little bit about your friendship with Rinna. When did this happen? Have you seen her IRL since? I mean, obviously that would be a little bit difficult right now with all things corona. Did you?
Yeah.
Just for shits and giggles or for another purpose?
I'll tell you this. But so basically we recorded, this is actually, if anyone will appreciate this, it's you. So she was supposed to be a guest on Shut Up Evan. And so.
Which would be, by the way, the best episode of all time. Like, apologies to Detox, but holy fucking shit. Oh my God.
It would have been. Yeah, sorry. And So I hop on the Zoom call and Harry Hamlin's face appears. And Harry's like, hey, I'm going to, Lisa doesn't want to do anything with the technology, so I'm going to get us all set up. Blah, blah, blah. Long story short, Lisa did not record on her end. The audio cut out after about 3 minutes.
Oh my God, Evan Ross Katz, I literally just got up from my bed and had to sit back down. Yeah, I have so been there.
Yeah, so that's, so anyway, so it ended up being, we're going to do it again soon, but I don't want to like, I think it, we both need a breath after wasting that, not wasting, but spending, you know, I felt really bad because I wasted her time. But anyway, so that was a nice little check-in. But yeah, I mean, we developed this friendship. I don't know somehow she found my Instagram. I'm so lucky for it. And it just became a sort of, we would regularly be commenting on each other's stories and whatnot. And now I have her number and now we're like, you know, I'll send her when I see funny things of her or, you know, I'll send her things here and there. But she's, I mean, one among the many great things about her, she's incredibly, incredibly plugged in, responds within a minute. And I don't say that because I think I'm special. I think that's just the kind of person she is with people in her life. And for whatever reason, I've been lucky enough on the periphery to infiltrate her life.
And have you been, I mean, has this Rinna appreciation happened through Housewives?
No.
Did you have any kind of it precedes?
Oh yeah.
Tell me that history. That just, is fascinating to me.
Yeah, I'm a huge Melrose Place fan.
Got it.
Love Melrose Place, but also just like as someone who grew up loving pop culture, Lisa Rinna has always sort of been this kooky kind of figure. It's exactly the person she is on the show now. But it was at a time when there wasn't so much of, like, a template for success for that kind of personality type. She just was, like, this straight shooter, zany. I loved her in interviews. She was so joyous. I mean, she kind of was what Kelly Ripa is now on The Daily. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of what Lisa Rinna was at the time.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say, like, I, like, followed her in the sense of, like, I knew every project that she was in. But then, like, you know, I remember her Baywatch episode because she was a guest star on like one of the early seasons of Baywatch. I remember going.
Oh,
back
I didn't
and, like,
know that.
Yeah, I mean, she has this like really prolific, like legitimately prolific career. And so, anyway, Melrose Place is like my entry point, but I was very familiar with her pre Housewives and also pre Watch What Happens Live because I feel like a lot of people, if they don't know her from Housewives, they kind of know her as like an early guest on Watch What Happens Live.
Okay, got it.
But yeah, I've just always, I've connected with her spirit.
And so how do you navigate a little bit of a stand-up or admiration for her career? Now she's on Housewives, so it's like the best of both worlds because you're such an avid, so smart, intellectual Bravoholic. How do you navigate the idea of Rinna with a personal friendship with a what the fuck were you doing on TV or what actually just happened?
Yeah. Well, we talk about it. So like, for instance, before the first episode aired, this was like months ago, she had messaged me right after she filmed that segment with Sutton at Domenico Dolce's
apartment or
whatever.
Yeah.
She had messaged me about it and warned me, and she asked me to, quote unquote, go easy. And I was like, Rinna, I have like a policy. I'll never come for anyone that I like. I'll just be silent. And so she's aware of the fact that I don't love Beverly Hills in terms of in my ranking of Housewives franchises. However, that's changing. But she's aware. I mean, like, she knows that I explained to her. It's like, I love you, but you're holding that series up, which thankfully no longer the case. Everyone seems to be putting in the work finally. But I kind of, the version of her that I like the most, though I love her on the show, I love, like, the Instagram, TikTok, like, that side of Rinna. her dancing, it's like
the daily dance.
Yeah. And I feel like there was an interesting moment in this week's episode when they showed that giant pole in her backyard, where mm-hmm. it was kind of like, if you're a Rinna on Instagram person, that scene meant something very different, because we'd watch that journey of like her dealing with that pole in her backyard. We'd watch that play out on Instagram. So I felt like that was like kind of like one of those Easter egg moments of like, if you know, you know.
And can you, speaking of if you know, you know, can you tell the listeners a little bit about this whole Dolce shenanigan? Why she would say, you know, this wasn't my fault. I had to film there, but I don't necessarily die for them.
Yeah, I mean, they're a complex, they're both complex figures within fashion, because it's really easy to dismiss them entirely. But I think that's sort of like revisionist history, because they do hold a place within this industry, and they have always and still sometimes do make very beautiful clothes. So I just want to preface, I don't like judge someone for wearing Dolce & Gabbana unless it's like an A-list star on a red carpet who that's being styled. At that point, mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, the stylist should know better. But anyway, they have a long history. So there's two of them. They used to be a couple. They're no longer a couple. They're just business partners. They've had multiple incidents. I mean, whether it be they released a line of shoes that they called slave sandals. That was like one of the first major incidents. They've openly been very supportive of Melania Trump and came at Instagram commenters that were questioning their support of Melania, calling mm-hmm. them fat pigs. They've made remarks about Lady Gaga, about Miley Cyrus, about Selena Gomez, about the way, about their physical appearance. And then most famously, what kind of got them quote unquote canceled, and I hate that term, but in 2018 maybe, there was to be a show in China that they were doing, and mm-hmm. they released a series of ads leading up to the show that many people interpreted as racist, and mm-hmm. everything sort of just kind of spiraled from there. Long-winded, but just to say, they are just two people within fashion that exist under an old construct of fashion that sort of adheres to, like, for people that don't follow the industry, they're kind of more in the Miranda Priestly ilk of the industry that I think is very
dying out. Passe. Yeah. And I mean, they've said stuff about surrogacy that's wild and bananas.
Yeah. So it's so funny. It's like the list is so long. It's like in my mind, I mentally be like, hey, well, which one do I pick from? But yeah, they're not good people. And I've written about them for years and years and years. And they were kind of absent for all of 2019. And then they've begun to have a resurgence in 2020. And I don't think it's any coincidence that Sutton chose to shoot there.
You don't think so? Because P.S., she at the dinner party, which we absolutely must do a deep dive into, Dolce, at the vocally Dolce, apologetically Dolce, like off the rack and not couture. She wore, I think you would know this, Dolce maybe couture or something when she was filming with Rinna 3 months prior.
Yeah.
And then obviously we saw the bajillions of dollars she spent on those hot pant short situations at his atelier or whatever you want to call it. I mean, how does that, what are your thoughts? You think that she planned to, do you think that she was trying to be political or make a splash or something?
Why do you think she chose it? I actually would doubt, and it's interesting. So I'm actually pursuing an interview with Sutton for paper right now, hoping to get into this. But mm-hmm. I actually wouldn't be surprised if she doesn't even know any of the controversies surrounding them. No, I just think it was a concerted effort on Domenico's part to be like, you know, Beverly Hills Housewives is seen to many, many people as like a pillar of like mm-hmm. fashion. Especially like fashion, where fashion meets pop culture. And mm-hmm. so there's a lot of value in terms of the demographic of people that watch this show converting to people that would potentially buy Dolce & Gabbana ready-to-wear clothing.
And I have to tell you, they may be garbage people in real life, but when Sutton walked into that dinner party, she honestly took my breath away. I thought she looked great.
Yeah.
The top knot, phenomenal. The jewels, she walked in and I was immediately like, oh my God, Dolce. And then I felt guilt about it, but I was also like, no, She looked amazing. Like, I would wear that dress. I would wear that whole entire outfit with different shoes because I did not like the situation on the bottom. But aside from that, I would wear that in a second.
Yeah,
I'm not going to pay for it, but I would borrow it.
She definitely, I don't want to say she, like, gets a pass for me, but, like, I think that there are true villains that exist on these shows, like villainous, awful human beings, like a Vicky, like a Kelly Dodd. I would say Sutton is someone who just lives in a bubble. And yeah, though I'm not aligned with her sort of like the ways in which who she aligns herself with, and I'm sure I probably don't align with her political views, I don't find her expression of her true self, it doesn't make me dislike her. It just makes me kind of say, okay, I know who you are.
Sidebar, she donated the federal max to Hillary Clinton, $2,700 or whatever in 2016.
Okay.
Hey, Sutton. And, you know, Sutton is a polarizing figure and has been so far. And I think since the start of this, since day one, I have been Team Sutton. And it's so interesting to me that so many of the people who were saying last season is boring, they're all getting along, this is so stupid, we need somebody else in the mix, are now presented with someone who, just even by the nature of their personality and communication skills, as you said, not a supervillain or anything else, but who is a different person. These same viewers who were so critical of last season, rightly so, are now like, wow, I don't think she should get a diamond. I don't think I like her. When did that happen where we decided that it was a personality context and we only wanted in our hearts and minds Miss Congeniality across the board?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know the answer, but I do think what's interesting is that she's coming in a little bit different than your typical villain, in that she isn't, it's like, I know some people might read her as unlikable immediately, but she's just, as Erica kind of, I think it was Erica or maybe Rinna said in one of the confessionals, it's like, Erica, I think, said it. She was like, I've met women like Sutton, and to a woman like Sutton, something like name cards on the table is extremely important. Mm-hmm. And it's details like that that it's like, Sutton is more just kind of is being who she authentically is in a way, whereas when other villains kind of come in, and oftentimes come in hot, they're kind of coming in with seemingly an express desire to stir shit up. Sutton's intention to me does not seem that of let's make good reality TV. I could be fooled. We're only a few episodes in and I don't know her that well enough to really have a clear indication. I really liked what Brian said about like waiting. I think he said 5 episodes on your last episode.
Yeah, the Eileen Davidson Accord. Yeah.
Yeah. But that said, it's like, I think that there's something really fascinating about Sutton's immediate authenticity and like assurance of who she is that reminds me of Dorinda, in terms of just like, this is a woman coming into the show who knows everything about herself and isn't coming here with any sort of intention of having a journey, in a way that I think a lot of other women, when they come on the show, they want the ride.
Yeah, and I think, as she has said so many times over, like, she's good. She's got the money. She thinks a job would be cute and fun as a hobby. Like, oh, maybe I could, like, make my own money. Like, that would be sweet. I think that would be, like, cute. That would be adorable. Like, some sort of Monopoly box full of whatever colored cash she'd prefer to put in her register at her multi-million dollar boutique situation where champagne flutes are $1,500 a piece and everything looks perfection, but no one can afford it. I watch her and I think this is a woman who is very specific, who's probably surrounded by women who are very specific, who reminds me of Ramona in the sense that she has probably always existed like this and is maybe surrounded by women who are very, very similar to her, but to whom I've never had necessarily like access, if that makes any sense, aside from work that I've done, you know, like in my daytime world consulting. She is who she is, and she also isn't actually apologetic about it. Like, when she says at one point about, oh, Teddy, yada, 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 she's not necessarily apologizing for what she said to Teddy. She's more, oh, that sucks, that like she ran off crying and she's hormonal or whatever else, but she's not apologizing or interested necessarily in growing in that way. Like, she came in secure, and that's the kind of person I think that she'll continue to be. Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah, no, very accurate. That said, if we try and hold on to this plot with her and Teddy for too long, that could go pantygate for me very quickly in terms of, like, there's not really a there. This was cute for an episode, but, like, I just don't, I don't really want to follow a Sutton versus Teddy plot point much further because it's a dead end road.
And whose side are you on, Sutton v. Teddy?
I just don't acknowledge Teddy as someone to, I mean, we're not, it's not a fair fight.
Poor sweet Teddy is
not
like.
Poor sweet Teddy, no.
No, I know.
Get off the show.
But poor sweet Teddy, I mean that in a way where it's like, I don't care enough about you to let, you know what I'm saying? Where it's like, oh, she's so stupid. Like, she really thinks being chill means saying, I'm so chill, I'm going to have zero manners as a host and just tell you that I don't care whether you come or not. Production is making me shoot here or is making me invite everyone. I don't want anyone to be there because now this business has become a success. And I don't want you to badmouth the event. So instead, I'm going to passive aggressively badmouth you in saying, if you don't want to come, I don't care so much that it won't affect me because I am so cool that I'm going to tell you how much I don't care about your opinion and support and presence at this thing I hold very near and dear to my heart, as opposed to saying, hey, Evan, I would love to have you over at my weird text physical being therapeutic exercise point system all in. It's Sunday on Rodeo Drive at noon. Dinner's at 5. If you'd like to come at noon or 5 o'clock, you're more than welcome. You might not be comfortable staying after dinner, and I appreciate your time. It would be great to see you. And not any other kind of caveat of, if you don't come, I don't give a shit, because that to me is telling me that you already don't give a shit about me, so why should I care?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't give a shit about her whether or not she gave a shit about me.
So you're not all in about Teddy's all in.
No, Teddy's so wrong for the show and such a weird misstep for them to bring her back. But I feel like they really, Kyle needed a more direct ally and someone that could kind of be a B character for her scenes in ways that Rinna couldn't be. Because Rinna has her own thing going. So I feel like they wanted Kyle to have a lap girl. I was going to say lap dog, but I didn't want to call her a dog. But maybe calling her a girl is condescending too. A lap woman?
Lap person. Lap woman. Like, that a lap. Just a lap. It's strange to me to say this, and I kind of want to take it back while it comes out of my mouth. But if this is the kind of Teddy that we're going to see this season, of someone like acting like a moron, I don't have an issue with it. And I think it's because there's other stuff going on where it's like, I'm seeing her, she's overreaching, she's doing stuff that I disagree with. It's like dumb, but I'm okay with it because I have Sutton's energy. I'm watching them not understand each other, not able to translate themselves to each other in like that person's language, if that makes any sense. I don't hate it. I don't know that that's a rousing review, especially on a season that so far seems to be like peak excellence in a way that Beverly Hills hasn't for a very long time. But I don't mind that kind of discombobulated JV energy.
Huh. I guess it's just hard for me to reason how all we're talking about, like, we've spent how long talking about this, and we've been talking about Sutton, who is a friend of, and we talked about Rinna, but, like, we've talked about no other cast member, and there's a reason for that, and it's, like, the impact that Sutton is making on this show so quickly, it's just, we haven't had that from a housewife, let alone a friend of, and also when you compare her to our New York friend of, Elise, who's getting scrapped right and left, it's just interesting that, like, they're giving Sutton confessionals, we're seeing her home, we're seeing her man, we're having her lead the drama for multiple scenes this episode. It's like, I've never seen them introduce someone with so much screen time and yet so clearly in a reduced role.
Well, I think the only reason that she was brought in to be full time, the only reason that she wasn't is because her ex-husband made them cut out all the shit with their kids. I don't know why that made production think that she couldn't still be full time without showing her kids. I think it's the same thing. She feels full time to me. So why they needed to demote her in that way makes no sense. But they are treating her full time. These women thought that she was full time this entire time that they were recording until this custody stuff or whatever else permissions came up. So I treat her as full time because that's the way the show is treating her. Right. That's the way the editors have treated her, probably because this is the footage and coverage that they have of her. She has gotten more screen time than Garcelle, but it's also because she is a very, very different energy and personality than Garcelle, and it's going to be easier for her to be in conflict versus Garcelle.
Yeah, and I really enjoy the depiction of Sutton's kind of wealth, because I think there's just a lot of gradient in terms of types of wealth, right? And I feel like we haven't seen this really since early seasons with Vanderpump. In terms of having this taste for luxury, and I guess in Sutton's sense, it's a little like basic in terms of like she's very label driven, but just even looking around at the design of that house, she is just clearly, and also giving away $1,200, you know, clutches. Like, I think this is just a woman who loves excess in a way that it became a little gauche to like to flaunt excess in this way on the show over time. You know, it just became increasingly like, you know, I think about what's Luann's like early tagline, like, oh no, someone's like, I like vodka,
please.
No, there's like, I think it's a Lou early one where she's like, I like living a luxurious life, a privileged life, and I don't like to say apologize for it or something. But anyway, it's just like that aspect of the show really kind of went away because it just wasn't culturally aligned with where the culture was moving. And I feel like Sutton kind of has a lot of that old school sort of like just that lifestyles of the rich and famous, minus the famous. But I think that's a quality that the show benefits from.
Speaking of that clutch, what the fuck was the deal with that clutch? Was that sponsored content? Because why would those two women wear the same clutch, talk about how much they love the clutch, dress their entire outfits?
Was it sponsored content from the show?
Like, did that clutch designer pay money or give something to get included in Sutton's gift bag and then discussed repeatedly in the episode?
So I don't know. What I would guess just from past experiences with similar things, not exactly, though, I would guess that the clutches were gifted from the brand to Sutton. With the express understanding that she would give them to the housewives, there wouldn't be any ROI. There wouldn't be any guarantee of mention on show. There wouldn't be any guarantee of post, just because she doesn't know the final edit ultimately. So as much as she can say, I'm going to keep saying the brand, or we're going to both wear them to the dinner, they don't know that that will actually go into the show. So I think it was just this brand saw it as a marketing opportunity to, because if you really think about it, it's a few thousand dollars in their bucket, but like chances are the women are going to show it off on their social just because it's very like, it's an aesthetically interesting clutch. And to them, the ROI is like the possibility that Dorit will repost it, or as was the case, that it would show up in this episode. And then I feel like the brand would then, after the fact, go to places like Page Six and ID the brand and be able to run a story, which they did, which is like, Sutton Strzok gave these $1,200 Perrin clutches away at her party, blah, blah, blah. And so that to me was how, I don't think it was done with the full understanding of how far it would go. I think they just got lucky.
Okay, that's really interesting to me because I thought it was less the Sutton involvement, though of course she would be involved at some point, and more some sort of agreement. Maybe there was like synergy amongst companies with that.
Yeah.
Fashion house and Bravo itself.
I mean, we could watch the end credits, but there would need to be disclosure in the episode.
Oh yeah.
And so I feel like you can circumvent disclosure through going through the Sutton route, whereas if you get Bravo involved, it becomes legal. It's like suddenly there's like paperwork and
did they had to do a disclosure then when the New York Housewives went to a movie. What movie was that? Wasn't that an Anne Hathaway movie or something? It was the one with Anne Hathaway and what's her face? Rachel, what's her face? Not Dratch. There was a movie that they went to. I mean, God bless. There was a movie that I think Dorinda went to and she was making it into some sort of comparison with like Sonia. And it was so obviously a plug for the movie. And the only difference was that these women usually do those like fake, cute, funny commercials when their new episodes air. And this was just like direct SponCon that they were spinning and pretending had something to do with like an actual conversation of the plot or
something. Right. But do you remember how that scene like felt different than the rest of the show?
Yeah, it felt fake. It was The Hustle. It was them going to a movie theater and watching The Hustle.
Yeah, this feels a little too integrated to be so. It's just like, I don't think that the show is as masterful in its sponsorship moments than. But I mean, but hey, if this was, bravo, bravo. Bravo, bravo, bravo.
And speaking of bravo, bravo, bravo. So I typically watch episodes the morning after they air, like the afternoon after they air. And I did the same with Beverly Hills this week, but I was flooded with messages as it was airing from people being like, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, sending me Aaron stuff. And I was responding to DMs and being like, I haven't watched it yet, but that sounds amazing. And I love when people are letting me know what's happening during, because I think that adds flavor to when I eventually watch. It was an episode that I am going to rewatch every other day for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I felt like it was an episode of such excellence, artistically, editorially, psychologically, that I don't think I could ever even unpack what I saw. Aaron alone is a 9-hour discussion. I got in touch with Steve from Faces by Bravo, who, in addition to having his wonderful Instagram account, is also a registered nurse dealing with kids who have cancer in California, and was like, can you break down for me what Aaron was saying? Because I don't get it. And I feel like there's something here to talk about, but I need it. He was like, he was giving me the medical background that I needed, because I was like, tell me what cancer is. Like, I literally was Googling, what is cancer and your immune system?
Oh my God.
How are they connected? And I was sending him screenshots and I was like, maybe he just put like these three words together. I was trying to devil's advocate for poor, sweet, dumb as fuck, possible Scientologist Aaron. And it was just everything. There were so many layers to it. I don't think I'll ever recover. I am in such a good mood, not only because I'm wearing Kyle by Shahida, but also because I'm feeling the energy and lift of this week's Beverly Hills, and I never thought it would happen. I didn't think it would happen this soon, and I definitely didn't think it was going to happen this season, and holy shit, was I wrong. Holy shit, was I wrong. Everything. Evan Ross Katz, everything.
Yeah, I mean, what a scary, sexy man who was made a little less sexy by figuring out his level of depravity, whatever.
Potato, potato. You're on the right show.
I don't know. Really interesting, just because it's like, if this would have happened last season, it's all timing, right? Like, this wouldn't have been able to happen last season because it wouldn't have landed, because part of why this scene worked was all the reaction shots of Rinna, of Erica, of Garcelle, of Faye.
Oh my God, Faye forever.
So it's just one of those wonderful moments where it's like, they both got a person being crazy and they got the funny reaction meme moment. So like, the scene is doubly watchable, because on the one hand you're like, oh, cuckoo crazy, but you're also just like elated to see the women giving face, literally.
And it was also a window into like Denise. Like, now I get why she was married to Charlie.
Yeah.
Because she seems very interested in aligning herself with people who live in a space and state of paranoia. And she is more than happy to hop on board. And I don't mean to say, obviously, she wasn't a part of like the Tiger Blood or whatever the fuck it was era of Charlie Sheen, but I'm sure there was some thread there of him being crazy when they were together and at the beginning of their marriage. And she seems very happy to participate in this world in which they live, where they can't talk about it because, like, the CIA is right behind them in a lift. Like, what is there any possibility of truth to this? Like, I do believe in alternative medicine. I do think that traditional medicine and alternative med, or what we consider alternative medicine, need to work together. I deal with a chronic illness, which is managed in overwhelming part due to being on an autoimmune diet. Like, food is important. I don't know what to say. It doesn't mean that cancer is the new Spider-Man, but I do think that there are snippets there. I don't think it's I appreciate Yolanda in a different way than I used to. I think that there are some ideals of dealing with, like, holistic energy and treatment that are good. I just don't know about how the building of an atom bomb computes with, like, having strep throat.
Yeah, I also think this is, like, a double whammy of not the time, not the place, because it's, like, one, not the time, not the place at this dinner party. Two, not the time, not the place for this reality show. And so I just feel like there's, like, those two layers of, like, whatever it is that you're doing and giving him the benefit of the doubt that there's some smidgen of rational thought pattern behavior, whatever, behind it all. It's just, like, what was... Okay, let me put it this way. What was the best end result of that scene for him? It's like he explained this, and all the women were like, oh, yeah, like,
that he comes, he is the healer who's going to teach these women and people who already have great power and access about something that only he can provide, which is the ultimate truth. And Denise is thinking, people are chasing us. I don't want the truth to be revealed because we could be in a lot of trouble. Now, again, playing devil's advocate in this imaginary universe, I'm sure that there, it's like, it's so hard for me because I have to, like, then pretend that this is reality. But I'm sure that if someone is dealing with alternative therapy that's getting, like, good results, that that wouldn't align with the mission of Big Pharma. But that is me taking out 99% of what he was saying and giving him the absolute total benefit of the doubt, and in a sense, like, directly contradicting him in order to try to understand him, which is probably not a great position for someone that you're seeking medical treatment from.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, I don't remember the Adam work in junior high or high school. I'm pretty sure I didn't do great on those tests. But I also know we're not necessarily going to be throwing a ticker tape parade for cancer anytime soon. And if cancer was acting as a Band-Aid for a super infection, wouldn't that show up on any tests? Or is, like, big cancer now a lobbyist? I don't know. It's an interesting spin. Yeah. We need to get somebody's publicist involved in that. Like, someone text Elizabeth Cancer and find out how she came to so much power and what we need to do to take her down. Like, what's happening? But also, I loved it. I mean, it was great TV. Oh, I don't think that that's what Kyle was expecting him to say. I don't think she was setting him up. The fact that he was also seemingly heavily intoxicated was another benefit to this magical cinematic experience. And then Mauricio, who's never been as high in his life as he was that night, staring at him with, like, his mouth open while eating Denise's leftover salmon and supporting our energy in the going, like, directly into Aaron's camp, like, oh, yeah, lots of space. When he's talking about the atom, he's like, yeah, 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 lots. And sort of drooling and just being wonderful. I mean, the concoction of all of it, it was like the zestiest stew I've ever seen presented at a Beverly Hills dinner party that wasn't of the extreme of the dinner party from hell.
Yeah, there's a really good dinner party in, I think it's season 4, It's with Camille and Yolanda. I'm blanking on what exactly happens, but there's a second one that I always think of when I think of another really good dinner party on Beverly Hills. There's a famous quote from the one I'm thinking of too. I'll think of it later.
Okay, you'll think of it.
But anyway, but yeah, I mean, this was definitely high voltage, high impact.
High impact. I wanted that soup cappuccino with the truffle foam. Everybody was the energy. All of the women, as you said, showing up with all of the glam and all of the world. I was so appreciative. I don't think Kyle has looked as good as she did that night to me in a very, very long time. Was obsessed with the makeup, was obsessed with the glam, was obsessed with the little diamond earring, costume jewelry situation.
Yeah.
And it felt just exceptional. I was just so happy. It brought me so much joy. This week in Housewives, I'm just so appreciative and glad, honestly.
I also just looked it up. It was season 3, episode 12, and it has the "That's the point, Yolanda" quote from Camille. You don't know that?
That's the point, Yolanda. Why am I thinking of Kim when you're saying that?
I don't know.
I'm thinking, I have Kim Richards' voice in my head, like, "That's the point, Yolanda." Maybe I'm thinking about when she was talking about, like, the juicing or something on a reunion. I don't know. Oh, fascinating. Okay, I'll give that a little rewatch.
That's the point Yolanda was said in the same tone of voice of "have another piece of bread." So maybe.
That could entirely be what I'm thinking. I don't actually know. Guys, so many of you sent me satchels relating to Aaron that I need to read some of them. I got a Aaron satchel from Dan in Brighton, UK, who says, "Aaron went from hottest house husband to the guy I'm getting away from as fast as possible. How is that possible?" I would still maybe have sex with Aaron. I just wouldn't do it in his doctor's office like Denise. I don't know.
Yeah,
he doesn't need to talk. I don't know. He doesn't have a neck. It's also fascinating.
Talk to me, intrigued by him.
Right? Okay. another satchel from David in Oslo. Okay. "Hey, Sarah, I wanted to send you a satchel about BH. We, as the viewers, now finally learn what I personally have always suspected. I never really could get into Aaron. Yeah, he's buff and apparently hung, but I've always gotten a major creep vibe from him since day one. In this episode, we learn more about his business, and it was jarring to watch. As someone who actually studied for their medical degree, I find these kinds of healers especially disturbing." Oh, apologies, David from Oslo, for what I said like 3 minutes ago for 17 hours. "It was probably one of the most uncomfortable scenes of Housewives I've watched. He gave off a full-on cult member vibe, and what was even scarier to watch was Denise." Yeah, they were definitely operating at like OT3. Like, there was... I got like big Scientology energy from them of like, "We're going to tell you the truth. Like, you don't need an antidepressant. All you need is soccer." Like, there's some stuff going on there that someone needs to unpack.
Yeah.
Somebody. I don't know. I guess I always kind of assumed that Denise was a little bit of an angel. And I guess this really does reveal to us that there's more there to see.
Yeah, I think we might be getting like a reverse Camille, in the sense of like, I think she got a really good first season in terms of painting her in contrast to these women as being super like, throw on a jeans and a tank top and like really low key. Like, I think a lot of her attributes played really well given the other women and sort of their heightened sense of status. And Denise, who seemingly had the most status, being like poo-pooing status. But I think that now that we've had a season to get used to her settling in, we might realize that a lot of what we like loved about Denise is not without its own set of flaws.
I have one more Aaron satchel that I need to read because this Aaron stuff is just endlessly fascinating to me. A satchel from Callie in Kansas City who says, "Who are these people and why are they following Aaron? And Denise is protected? I've watched enough Law & Order and SVU to know that cult leaders thrive on quote-unquote educating others with their knowledge and why everything they were taught was a lie and how their way is the only way. And he's an attractive guy and has been married to former Hollywood starlets. So clearly he had a praying ground. If his Achilles tendon could grow back without surgery, why didn't he remove Denise's hernias without surgery? I don't like to yuck someone's yum, but he's probably a flat earther who doesn't believe in vaccines. True, and denies things like Sandy Hook. Hopefully untrue.
I believe it.
He really had me. He had me with a hot stepdad. He had me with a lack of neck. He had me with the overall lack of neck. He had me with, like, being friendly and quiet and kind. And now I guess I'm meeting him for the first time. And I am appreciative for the introduction because it was so entertaining. But I'm also like, oh, shit, this is who you've been all along. My bad. That's all there is really to say, right?
Yeah.
I mean, oy vey. Man, Denise is going to be having a little bit of a fight when the season really gets out of her hands. I wonder if she's following what people's reactions have been, or maybe they're just chalking it up to, like, we're just another couple cars chasing them up the street. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I don't know how this is going to go for them. And judging by the fact that she continues to only wear that gold confessional dress makes me think that she's not going to have a lot of opportunity to, like, change her side of the story, because maybe she only allowed herself literally one day in which to record these asides. Like, that doesn't bode well for poor sweet Denise in redirecting some of this.
That is accepting that this is all real. So
what do you mean?
I mean, I just think this, I think what happened on Wednesday was real, but I think what's coming down the pike with the Brandy stuff is all fake. So I think that, and I think her leaving is, like, I think that's all concocted. So I'll be interested to sort of watch it all play out.
Okay, way to drop a truth bomb and then just pretend that, like, that's no big deal. What are your thoughts on this? On what's happening with, I mean, I don't trust Brandy to save anyone's life, but what do you think is
when a storyline leaks in advance of the series, there's reason for just questioning. And I think that Brandy, if anyone's willing to sort of, like, go low and not care about the truth behind it or how reprehensible they might seem, it's Brandy. And I just think the staging of all of it just feels, yeah. And also, like, it's funny because, like, is Denise walking off this show like that? We have seven other women, like, we're fine, like, but it's just the way that they're kind of hyping up the, because I think one thing that they were really in search of, because Beverly Hills hasn't had it for a long time, is a season-long arc, right? So, like, Roni got really lucky because of Tom, that we had this Tom stuff to sort of propel the narrative, especially in seasons 9 and 10. Whereas, like, Beverly Hills had to do stuff like Pantygate because there wasn't sort of, like, fuel for the season. And so I feel like they view this Brandy Denise thing as something to launch a season-long arc. And that just feels a little premeditated to me. I have no proof. I mean, it's just a hunch.
Do you think that that was something that Brandy herself strategized to do in order to gain entry back into the show? Or do you think it was production being like, hey, Brandy, fuck anybody lately? Oh, how interesting. Why don't you roll up into filming this thing with Kyle and maybe talk to her about that?
Don't know. But curious to find out. Like, even if it's scripted, I'm talk
about
with,
truthers. Oh, I'm my fine God. You're a
it play out, but
you're like a, I don't even know what BTS truth, like, this is like true behind the scenes truth.
I mean, just
telling
look
happening.
At the trailer, for instance, where you have that iconic Kyle moment with, like, we were so happy then and everything, and, like, all of that, like, even her line delivery, it's like that was a written line for her to say for that, for the end of the first episode. Like, there's just moments that are happening and beats that are being hit that are, I love them, don't get me wrong, but are, you know, even the Bravo, Bravo, Bravo thing, it's like, I don't believe that for one second.
Don't you think, just to push back gently, ever so gently, don't you think that, sure, she might have been fed a way in which to narrate the season, when they're filming confessionals about the season months after, when they're deep in edit. I mean, they do that with a lot of women. They ask you a question and you answer in the form of the question, so it makes sense when you're going later on, and maybe they'll push you to talk about it.
But then the question would be, if you look at the end of the trailer with the Denise coming back into the green screen and the smile and everything, what was that then? That was an authentic moment? Like, what was there was no directive there in terms of, like, we want this button on our trailer. Because that just, that the quality of production on that and the specificity of it was such that, and I don't know. It just, like I said,
oh
even
my
if
God.
It's planned,
you're like
I'm
blowing
happy.
My mind right now.
Well, I mean, hey, what do I know? Like, I could be completely incorrect. And I'm also judging just based off of what I've seen. But just in looking, this show very specifically, more than any other franchise, needs a good season. Like, it's losing, its most loyal viewers are not tuned in. Not even just literally, but also just in terms of, like, the lack of hype around the show. And
yeah, they weren't connected.
Yes,
when they weren't connecting with us.
If you're
yeah.
a producer and you're strategizing around the next season, you're going to want to plant seeds so that you have a garden that blooms when the season arrives. And I think you have to be really methodical in how you do that. And so I think this was their route.
Have you talked about this at all with your dear friend Lisa Rinna?
No. One thing I'm, like, deeply disinterested in when it comes to Lisa Rinna is, like, talking about the show with her. Even on our podcast episode that is no more.
Recipes.
I like talking to her about, like, the culture, like, outside, like, around the show. But in terms of, like, things that happen on the show, she's not the person that I would, like, want that. She has so much more to offer to me than, like, that. That's just, yeah, I don't know. Like, someone that I'd want, like, I would want, like, Heather, New York Heather, not DeBro. Like, she is the kind of person I'd be like, tell me about production on things. Like, tell me about this vacation and the pirate and whatnot. But with someone like her, with Rinna, I, like, would rather talk about other things besides living through this bizarre world. But I mean, it is interesting to, I don't think she would say anything one way or the other.
Speaking of production, shifting gears, what did you think of the musicless, potentially lighting effectless, but spirited runway presentation that was Sonia by Sonia Morgan? Sonia by Sonia Morgan presents.
Yeah, that happened.
I wasn't expecting the lack of music. I'll say that. I really wasn't expecting the lack of music. I don't know if that was purposeful or delayed. I think some music did get piped in.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy with Sonia when it comes to, like, her just, like, you know, if you don't prepare for something, then it's going to come out chaotic. So it's kind of like, you know, that's always sort of the case. It's, you know, and, like, I admire her. There's a je ne sais quoi about Sonia. I mean, it's undeniable, right? Like, that I admire her seeing this fashion brand through. And there is a world in which there are sales and there's a life to this brand that we just don't know about. But I just don't think that New York Fashion Week, which, by the way, if we want to be, like, really... Sonia didn't show at New York Fashion Week. And neither
did... No, she showed in a bar.
No, but also, and neither did Kyle. Like... There are shows that are on the official calendar of New York Fashion Week, and then there are shows that show during New York Fashion Week, and then put out that sort of air that they, like, Garrow Sparrow, the show that Tinsley walked in, another instance of that wasn't Fashion Week, that was a show during Fashion Week. And so I just think, and Pamela Rowland, great example of a show during Fashion Week.
That wasn't at Fashion Week, Pamela Rowland?
No.
Oh, my God. See, that I did not know.
Yeah.
Teaching me, Doris Kearns Goodwin, of Fashion and
Bravo.
So,
it's just interesting watching the show sort of want, like, they really want this proximity to New York Fashion Week, but they're not actually, they're very much on the periphery. So that's really interesting. But I mean, hey, look, I loved the end. When Sonia changed into the Tinsley outfit at the end there, I thought that was
Leah's outfit, the sweatpants.
Sorry, Juicy Couture.
Juicy Couture. That plus moment 10 was years. Like
Sonia at her best, and also just, you know, Sonia using her Google, talking into her phone during the Garo Sparrow show. Sonia with her glasses draped over her nose. Like, it just, even when Sonia's in turmoil, she's always firing on all cylinders. No, excuse me. She's always firing not on all cylinders, and that's the point.
Which show do you instinctively look at? And apologies to Atlanta, you did Secrets Revealed. I saw Secrets, they were revealed. It turns out, spoiler alert, I didn't really care. Which show right now, franchise, Beverly Hills or New York, did you watch or are you watching and feeling like, oh my God, I'm home? Like, which one is making your heart go pitter-patter?
Beverly Hills.
Right?
I thought your conversation with Brian last week about New York, that episode, was so interesting. And okay. I learned a lot. And I actually really, a lot of what Brian was saying sort of after really letting it marinate in my brain, I was like, you know, he makes a lot of really good points. And I just am not sure if like, I love the cuckoo aspects. Mm-hmm. Luann getting the massage from the dog groomer, that I love. Mm-hmm. Ramona working out in her apartment and them showing her moaning. I love like moments like that.
Yeah.
But I'm not all aboard Leah in the way everyone else seems to be so quickly. I feel Bethany's loss at every turn. Like, I just feel her absence, especially in terms of narrating. And I also just, like, I'm missing a seventh woman. There's just something about New York right now that Leah's definitely breathing new life into the show, but it just needed, I'm reminded kind of like, you know how we always say, like, season 5 was, like, the reboot? But it's, like, season 7 was also a reboot, because not only was it Bethany, but it was also Dorinda, and it was also the first and only time that we had 8 housewives. And I feel like New York really needed it needed Leah plus 1 or plus 2 to sort of shake things up a bit more. So while I feel like they're delivering, I'm just not... It's fun. It's warm. It's comfortable. But I in the way that Beverly Hills is so refreshed and the editing is feeling so sharp, I feel like New York could have just used a little bit more. Because at the end of the day, like, was the Tiki Torch, was all of that like antics like wild? Yes. Was like the yelling in the kitchen? Like, did and like, yes. Is it funny? Like, socialist, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's memeable. I'm not sure if it's, like, memorable in the way... I'm not sure I'll be thinking about that episode in years to come.
So that's exactly hitting the nail on the head. It's memeable versus memorable. I think New York is memeable and Beverly Hills is memorable. I think Beverly Hills is giving us a genuine narrative with these crazy moments that aren't kooky crazy, but that are fascinating, sometimes dark humor crazy, and interesting.
Yeah.
And memorable, and New York is like, these women are going crazy, and they're drinking, and they're talking, and Luann is thinking about drinking, and she's talking about her, whatever else, and Sonia's going crazy, and Ramona's a dick to anybody that's ever worked in the service industry, because she's a monster of a person, and these are all these moments that are good, they're like good in the moment. I'm enjoying New York, but it is a candy apple right now. Yeah. It is just all sweet with all of the nutritional value. No longer available.
We're also sort of missing an outlier character. So it's like kind of what Alex McCord was in her early seasons and what Heather was later on, which is like thinking about when they go to Heather's house and Ramona's like, is this your house? And the whole air conditioning thing and all of that stuff. So like there's no one on the show right now that would allow that dynamic to play out. There's no one that's sort of like that's smart in a different sort of way than these women. And it's a little bit more tough in a way that like Heather was such a, I could talk about Heather all day. I love Heather so much, but I just feel like there's a character missing right now that could add a little bit more oomph. And it's like, I'm even find myself missing early season Carol right now, just because it's this kind of, it's antics after antics after antics. And while Lou's antics feel refreshing because Lou's, there's just a lightness about Lou that feels like we haven't seen since, like, this is like very like season six Lou, which is like Lou at her best lately because the ego is kind of removed.
Right.
Over, and then like, oh, so it's like we're hearing Tinsley's gone and it's like, okay, so then we already were down a number and then we're going to be down even more. And I'm just, yeah. One quick note, though, I will just say, credit to Tinsley for the pre-show moment with Dale and the crying and everything. That moment felt authentic. Like, that didn't feel performative, and yet it's the best performance ever. I appreciate Tinsley's, like, there are moments like that where it's like Tinsley rises to the occasion of lack of self-awareness that I aspire to watch, not be.
Completely agree, and I also have to say that there were some moments of depth that I am hopeful that on whatever Zoom reunion happens that Andy will unpack, specifically Leah not understanding why having a single drink is not the path to destruction that everyone around her recognizes it can be. And I think she is thinking that she can control it because 9 years have gone by and everyone around her is like, that is not the way to handle addiction if you're an addict. You do not open the door, because once you've opened the door, it turns out it's Pandora's box. Like, it's just, there is no ifs, ands, or buts. It is a bad idea to have a drink. Then the edit goes back to her, like, running around naked, which probably isn't super helpful. But everyone in her circle who knows her is saying, you're putting yourself at risk. And her response is to be upset and saying, like, why would you think I would ever ruin my life again if I've done that, like, one time around? Not understanding the reality of the fact that by simply taking a single sip, you're going down that path.
Yeah. Like, and believe it's also us. Like, think about what this show is. Like, watch a few episodes. It's like, it's just sort of, yes, is it entertaining to watch a woman who's been sober for 9 years have drinks and go wild and throw tiki torches around? Yes. But it's also kind of like a bit like, sad to think that someone would sign up for this with her history, knowing what the container of the show is, and then on top of that, that she would choose to present herself as a sober woman and then an episode later be like, oh, well, fuck it. Because it's like, there's a world in which Leah just never brought up her not drinking, and then we wouldn't be able to sort of have conversations about accountability. Hey, Teddy. But it's just like a strange thing, because it's like you brought yourself into the show and announced yourself as one thing and then pivoted so soon after announcing that. Whereas at least in the case of Luann, we got, I think, at least a whole season, and we've gotten multiple episodes of her. We've gotten the sober journey with her. Like, she, I'm not saying, I mean, I can't speak to her beginning drinking. That's her personal decision. But like, we saw a sober Lou for a long time.
Yeah, and I also think I'm super confused about the timeline of it all, because Leah said on camera at one point that she had started drinking in the couple months prior. So why would her mom be so upset about her having a drink while she was in the Hamptons unless she hadn't told her mom, or she told her mom that she'd gone crazy or whatever else? Like, if you're withholding, if it was factually correct that you had started pre-Hamptons and you wanted to tell your mom when you did start drinking, why didn't that happen then?
I also have questions about mom, because by not speaking to your daughter, I'm imagining that's going to cut off communication to your granddaughter as well. Because Leah's probably the, I would imagine, the gatekeeper of who her daughter talks to. And so I'm just thinking from grandma's perspective, why would you cease communication just because you didn't like some behavior versus actually talking it out and expressing how you feel? It just feels like I just sense a lot of chaos, but like uninteresting chaos. I'm not interested in.
Oh, see, I'm interested in it, but I just don't think that Leah's going to get to the point that I'd like her to see, like, this moment of self-reflection that we demanded of Luann. I think the same kind of rules have to apply here, even to a newbie.
I'm glad to see, though, that she's gelling. Like, when Dorinda was on Watch What Happens Live last night, she was saying how, like, close she and Leah have become. And I think one good thing about Leah for certain is that she really has found her way into the group in a way that feels organic in a way that, like, someone like Heather got lucky because of she found Carol, but someone mm-hmm. like a Heather, someone like a Kristen weren't able to sort of get into the groove, and Barbara being a great example, weren't able to mm-hmm. get into the groove of the group. I feel like there's an immediate Leah fits in with the group.
Well, tattoo all that on my ass, yeah, because right? my God, I think that works out well. Oh my God, Evan Ross Katz, I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours. Amen. Can you tell the listeners how to follow you online and, of course, listen to Shut Up, Evan?
Well, you can follow me on Evan Ross Katz on all platforms. And yeah, Shut Up, Evan's available in anywhere that you can listen to a podcast.
And can you tell Lisa Rinna I need a duster? Thank you. Yeah, I would sure. appreciate it. Inside Skinny Legend, a.k.a. Medium. Guys, first off, thank you to Kyle Richards and Shahida. I almost said Kyle Richards, Shahida. Kyle Richards and Shahida and team for this gorgeous robe. I'm going to post a photo of it on Insta. So at Dame Galley for all that and more. And listen, Patreon, my God, love of my life. You get bonus episodes throughout the week. Evan Ross Katz was just talking about some technical hiccups that you recently experienced with Lisa Rinna. Brian Moylan and I had the pleasure of recording twice when we recorded Andy Scrolls 156 because we had some technical issues the first time. We posted the second episode. Turns out we may in fact be able to salvage the first. So I am posting that entire episode once avail on Patreon. So guys, not only do you get tons of bonus content, but holy fucking shit, you're going to get an entire episode. And let me just tell you, we went in very, very hard on Vanderpump Rules and his book and much more. So if you're not subscribing to Patreon, which costs as little as $2 a month and keeps a roof over my head and also this bed, do so now, patreon.com/Andy's Girls. And I do promise you, we'll be doing that Andy's Girls happy turtle time, happy hour, Corona, Rona love, Kiki situation shenanigans, satchels of gold this month in May. So if you're not at the OG of the AG level, sign up for that ASAP because you will get first access. I'm going to be announcing the date hopefully next week and you'll get first access to sign up. It's going to be a lot of fun. Evan Ross Katz, this was like so great. I love you to bits.
Love you. I wish can we were on your couch.
Right? It was so cute and comfortable and cost $140 from Jennifer Convertibles. Amazing. Much like whatever else is appointed in Dorit's new house. I mean, only the best. And paid for the same way with credit I don't have. God bless America. Evan, die for you. Guys, I love you to bits. Thank you to all of you who have sent in 5-star iTunes reviews, the only reviews I acknowledge in life. And some people slid into my Venmo this week because my computer that broke during my recording with Ryan recently is like completely dead. And people were sending me money to get a new one, which I will eventually need. So sweet. I love all of you. I hope this gave you guys a little bit of light. During these very hectic times, and by hectic I'm only speaking of that dinner party with Aaron, and I can't wait to kiki with you guys again soon. Evan Ross Katz, die for you and die for all of you as well. Bye-bye.